You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It's National Wildlife Week. Coming up, we'll share some ideas to help you and your family connect with the outdoors while being mainly stuck at home. Now, Governor Evers issued an executive order today suspending in-person voting for what was scheduled to be tomorrow's statewide spring election. That comes after Evers last Friday called on lawmakers to postpone the election despite maintaining for weeks that it should continue. But the GOP declined to move the election date in recent days. Now, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald have filed a formal challenge with the state Supreme Court, saying in a statement earlier today, quote, "The clerks of this state should stand ready to proceed with the election." Craig Gilbert is the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief. Craig, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be with you.
Well, this is coming really fast. Lots of changes, just it's minute by minute here. The latest, it looks like, Craig, this is in the state Supreme Court now.
Yeah, someone on the Wisconsin Elections Commission that just met used the term whiplash to describe, you know, the rapidity of events, and that's a pretty good term. I mean, we have three court cases pending as we speak, and the election was supposed to be tomorrow. So everything about this is volatile. It's changing. It's subject to more change. We've obviously seen a lot of election drama and conflict in Wisconsin, but nothing like this.
All right, let's take a timeline now over the last few days. Previously, Governor Evers had been saying he didn't think he could unilaterally move an election date on his own. He threw it to the legislature. He called a special session. What's happened there over the last few days?
Yeah, so Governor Evers did change his position. You know, it's funny, weeks ago when Governor Evers was saying he didn't have the authority to do this, there were some conservatives saying, yeah, you have the authority, you just haven't used it. And now those positions are reversed. So Governor Evers made this move. The legislature has rejected his previous proposals for changes in the ground rules of the election. And you've got a federal court case going on, which has been appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. You've got the action before the state Supreme Court, and you have additional action in another federal court.
Now, if Governor Evers' announcement today goes through all of whatever courts it ends up in, if that plan just stands, what happens? What does our election look like?
You mean if Governor Evers...
If his delay plan goes through and holds up.
Yeah, so then there is no in-person voting tomorrow, and there's a lot more time to cast absentee ballots, presumably by mail. It's sort of unclear to me whether the Governor Evers plan anticipates any additional in-person early voting or any in-person voting at a date certain down the road, but the idea would be to give people a lot more time to cast absentee ballots. More than 1.2 million people have requested absentee ballots. Some of that is in-person early voting, but most of it is mail ballots, but only less than 800,000 of those mail ballots have actually been returned. And under the rules offered by a federal court last week, voters have until April 13th, another week, to return those mail ballots, but that issue is also being litigated.
Talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about what was going to be Election Day tomorrow, what might still be Election Day tomorrow, but Governor Evers said no in-person voting tomorrow. Let's have an extended time to send in ballots. Lawmakers, now Republican lawmakers, suing to keep the election on tomorrow. Craig, as we ran up to this, it seemed like there was a growing list of local government leaders, health officials, and more trying to get this thing bumped back. What kind of things do we see from around the state?
Well, we're certainly seeing some mayors around the state. They had called for a postponement of the election. Some health officials had called for a postponement of the election. Some of this, in fact, a lot of it, has broken down, as many things do concerning Wisconsin elections, along party lines. Wisconsin, this is Wisconsin's history, even more so, I would say, than other states. And that makes it very difficult for the governor and the legislature to get together on the same page when it comes to how to deal with an unanticipated crisis that affects the way we vote. But Wisconsin, because of the timing of all this, is being watched by other states and a lot of observers outside the state because they're looking ahead to November, and states are going to have to deal with some of the same issues in the if the pandemic persists in the run-up to November, and whether they have to start thinking about converting to mail voting in a much bigger way than they have in the past.
I've been reading some of the national coverage of this still scheduled election as of this weekend for tomorrow. One of the themes has been, what the heck are you doing, Wisconsin? A lot of people from other states and in the national media and political landscape wondering why we were still doing this thing, given that other states had bumped, again, their primary elections. We have more than a primary. What's been the argument here for keeping it, keeping in-person voting tomorrow?
Well, and it's not entirely partisan. I mean, it is a legitimate interest, I think, public interest, to not postpone elections. And the question is whether you can conduct an election safely or not. But I think the argument's been made that, and I think if you look ahead to November, nobody wants to postpone the November election.
Right.
So that's a legitimate argument to make. And there's so we're talking about competing kind of public interests. You've got obviously public health. You have sort of the fairness and equity of whatever set of rules we end up with. And then you have the interest in kind of letting the democratic process unfold. These things are in competition right now.
Craig, I think a lot of people are looking at the actions of both sides in our state government and wondering if, you know, there's a political calculation there. Is there any way to even judge whether having an election tomorrow or postponing it helps one side or the other? Or are we in such uncharted territory that there's no way to figure out what impact that could have?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and we are in uncharted territory, and that makes it harder to sort of calculate the partisan costs and benefits to each side. I think, as an article of faith, Republicans tend to see early voting, which includes, you know, which is a form of absentee voting, as kind of a more of a democratic thing, and they think their voters are more likely to turn out on election day. You also have the fact that Republican voters, according to the polling, seem to be less alarmed by the pandemic, and so Democratic voters may be more likely to stay home. I've looked at the voting patterns in the absentee ballots requested and returned, and you have both Democratic and Republican counties generating a lot of absentee ballots, but they tend to be the bigger counties. I mean, Dane, Milwaukee, Waukesha are all generating a lot of absentee ballot requests. The counties up north and to the west are generating fewer. How that, you know, nets out in partisan terms is hard to calculate because we're in uncharted territory and you can't make apples to apples comparisons with past elections.
Now, neither of us is a constitutional lawyer or a state constitutional lawyer, but it could just come down to a very straightforward interpretation of Wisconsin's constitution, right? Regardless of the health stuff, the question in front of the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, is, I guess, does the governor have the authority to go it alone and do this? Is that what we're watching for there?
Yeah, I mean, he's asserting emergency powers. But, you know, you're talking about a statute that has some, it is open to interpretation. And, you know, we're going to have to wait and see how the court rules. There's nothing specific in state statutes that kind of address the kind of crazy scenario that we're living through right now. So it's a matter of how you interpret that sort of general and broad language in the state laws.
Now, one of the elections here is for a state Supreme Court justice. It's a primary for the presidential race. It's a general election for state and local elections. I understand the Justice Dan Kelly, who's on the ballot, is recusing himself from the case since it directly affects his campaign. Can you remind us, Craig, what's at stake in that statewide election whenever it happens?
Yeah, so we have the big statewide race on the ballot is the nonpartisan contest for state Supreme Court. There's a 5-2 sort of conservative liberal split on the court right now. and the incumbent Dan Kelly is the conservative candidate. If he were to win, you'd preserve that 5-2 split. If he were to lose, it would be a 4-3 split. These elections, as everybody knows, have become very politicized and very partisan and very close. I mean, the election a year ago was an incredibly narrow victory by the conservative candidate. So these are elections that matter a lot to the two parties because it's the state Supreme Court that ends up kind of refereeing these disputes about voting laws and election laws.
In our last few moments, Craig, what pieces of this story are you watching for next?
Well, I mean, aside from, you know, what does the U.S. Supreme Court do and what does the state Supreme Court do, it's hard to know even how to analyze the politics of this election. You know, we normally would be looking at the Wisconsin election as kind of a barometer, you know, of how well are the two parties doing at mobilizing their voters. You know, we'd be looking at the Democratic primary, even though the Democratic presidential race is mostly over. It's hard to do any of that because this election's being conducted under such exceptional circumstances. That the real story, I think, for a lot of us is just the drama surrounding how and when the election is going to be conducted, and hoping that it isn't conducted to the detriment of people's personal health.
We'll keep watching for that. Thanks to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with us today to talk about the latest on tomorrow's maybe election day still up in the air. Stick around, more to come on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a Wisconsin health professional currently treating COVID-19 patients in New York City joined us to share her experiences. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg checking in on writer Michael Perry.
Wisconsin author Mike Perry is trying to hunker down the best he can right now, just like the rest of us.
Howdy, folks, up here in the little room over the garage where I do my writing.
And recently, he's been taking a little time most days to read from one of his books online.
I figure a lot of you are holed up and hunkered down, and it's nice to make a little connection, even if it's just me talking into my phone.
So I gave him a call just to check in.
How you holding up?
Oh, we're pretty fortunate. I mean, we've got a little place out here on the back 40, so my older daughter came home from college, and then also my younger daughter, of course, came home from school, and I came home from being on the road quite a bit. So we've been in a self-isolation, self-quarantine situation, and we're pretty fortunate. We have food and some options, you know. There's just so many people in such dire circumstances that we're doing fine, and then we're trying to abide by the rules and help the best we can, you know.
One day, Tom and I are rummaging in his machine shed for a piece of steel when I spy a scythe hooked in the rafters, just the same as mine. I start telling Tom about my scythe and how I've been using it. I tell him about how I sharpen it, using the three stones in sequence, keeping them wet, how I follow the arc of the blade. "Yeah, sounds like you're doing it about right," he says, and inside, I glow a little.
So what compelled you to hit record on your phone in the first place and do this?
I just thought, you know, right now folks probably just want a little connection. And so everybody in the world is streaming stuff right now. And I thought, I'm just going to prop up my phone, read something, say hello, and let it go at that and leave the mistakes in and the do-overs and the mispronunciations.
You get festooned up with an injury. You get festooned up with an injury. There's no do-overs on this. This is a one-off phone recording, folks. You get festooned
and
up with an
injury. So far, the reaction has been pretty positive, with people even mentioning they like the fact that there's a mistake in there or a do-over, or me laughing at my own jokes, which is really the hallmark sign of an amateur. But what can I say? I haven't read some of those pieces in a long time, and a couple of them are kind of funny.
I shall never forget the day I got my first pair of feeder pigs. While the farmer and I were lifting the first one into the pickup, I detected a profound pain in my left rear buttock. Upon closer examination, I discovered that the farmer's gigantic coon dog, no doubt assuming I was stealing the pigs, had gone stark raven bonkers and was actively masticating a double whopper's worth of my backside.
Why do you think it's important for authors and artists and musicians to still be putting their content out there on social media right now?
Well, I had a musician friend one time. I was being real like, oh, it ain't nothing. It's not important what I'm doing. And he said, you know, it's fine for you to be self-deprecating, but don't do so much of it that you're actually denigrating your audience. And the truth is, I think the reason it's important for writers and authors and musicians and all artists to be getting their stuff out there is that for many of them, and it's a matter of survival, but also I really have, in spite of myself, come to appreciate, you know, that 5 minutes of connecting with some different headspace, if you will. And so honestly, putting those things out there, I don't see it as any sort of capital letter effort. I just see, look, if I can take 10 minutes to record that thing, that is nothing if it's given people 5 or 10 minutes of relief and maybe a chuckle.
Most of all, take care of yourself and your loved ones. We'll see you down the road, or as they say where I'm from, well, I suppose.
Mike Perry is an author social distancing himself in Fall Creek, Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Colbert.
Now, New York City is the largest hotspot for COVID-19 cases in the country right now. According to data from the New York City Health Department, as of yesterday evening, there were nearly 65,000 confirmed cases, over 14,000 hospitalized, almost 2,500 deaths in the city. This has dangerously stressed the healthcare system there, and both supplies and staff have come from across the country to help. Jackie Christensen is a nurse practitioner who traveled from Wisconsin to New York City to work in an emergency department during the COVID-19 pandemic. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you describe for us the type of healthcare facility you're working in while you're in New York?
So while I'm out in New York, I'm at one of the hospitals. I'm working in the hospital emergency department primarily.
And what is, if there is such a thing, what's a typical day like there?
Well, a typical day out here hasn't happened right now. A typical day for me in an emergency department, I'm a nurse practitioner, so I do similar things to what a doctor does. I talk to patients, I evaluate them, I listen to their hearts and lungs, kind of things that you would expect at something like a doctor's appointment, and I figure out what's going on with them as far as their medical conditions go. So most people in an emergency department come in with a problem that they think is possibly life-threatening, and my job is to make sure that they're not in imminent danger of death, is the long and short.
As you say, it's not a typical day there now. Can you talk about the patients you're seeing come in with COVID-19 symptoms?
So honestly, the vast majority of patients that I've been seeing out here are COVID-19 patients, and we're seeing a lot of people in respiratory distress. One of the measurements that we take on people when they come into an emergency department is their oxygen level via what's called a pulse oximeter, which is just a little clip that sits on your finger and measures roughly how much oxygen is in your blood at a given time. It's not a perfect measurement, but it helps, certainly. The average for a normal person is anywhere between about 96% and 100%. We're routinely seeing people at 75%, 80%, sometimes even worse on room air. And even with supplemental oxygen, we're sometimes seeing them only come up into the low 90s. So we're seeing lots of respiratory distress. We're seeing lots of people with a problem called sepsis, which is where their blood pressure drops dangerously low to the point where it doesn't perfuse and get blood flow to their organs. So that's been a problem out here with COVID patients as well.
Jackie, what led you to go from Wisconsin to the center of this pandemic in the United States, at least for right now?
So honestly, part of it was just kind of happenstance. I had taken most of the month of April off just as a vacation time anyway, so I didn't really have anything to do. And it seemed silly for me to sit on the sidelines when there's a crisis going on.
So you took your vacation time to go and be in the hardest hit part of the country right now? Wow. Can you talk about what you're seeing from your fellow healthcare practitioners? What's the morale like? What's the mood like among people at the center of this?
The mood is up and down. It's almost like a parabolic sine wave. Sometimes the mood here is very high and teamwork is phenomenal. Sometimes some of the nurses are in the nurses' station just in tears because they can't handle what's going on, and nor should they handle what's going on. A normal patient ratio for nurses is about maybe at most 5 patients in an emergency department for 1 nurse. Where the lowest ratio I've seen here is 12 relatively sick people for 1 nurse. We've seen ratios as high as 20, 25 patients for just 1 RN, and it's just not enough. So the resources are, as far as manpower, is just absolutely stretched to their limits. Most of the people that have been working out here have been absolutely fantastic, that said. Everybody's been very kind. Everybody's been very helpful, particularly to me as a traveler who's never been in their facility before. I don't know where anything is, for example. So if I need supplies, I have to go and bother somebody else who's got 20 other patients that they're dealing with to try and get my stuff taken care of. So everybody's just been phenomenal as far as their welcoming attitude. Everybody's been very gracious to one another. Stress is high, and that stress doesn't always bring out the best in people, but I feel like it's been bringing out the best in some of my cohorts out here.
Now, seeing the worst of it right now in the U.S., the coronavirus, do you have a message for us here in Wisconsin on what we can do to help hopefully alleviate, prevent some of the worst cases here?
Please stay home. If you can absolutely help it, if you don't think that you're in a life-threatening condition, don't come to the emergency department. Most of the people that we're seeing are coronavirus patients and are sick enough that they do need medical intervention. But we're still seeing some people come in for things that they honestly don't need to be seen for on an emergent basis, and they're exposing themselves to all the other coronavirus patients when they do come in. So please, if you can help it, stay home, self-manage at home. Do the best that you can to avoid leaving your house if you are sick.
Jackie, thanks for joining us, and thanks for the work you're doing there.
Thank you for having me.
That's Jackie Christensen, a nurse practitioner who traveled from Wisconsin to New York City to work in an emergency department there during the COVID-19 pandemic. She joined us to share some of what she's seeing there in the middle of things. Coming up, you may be cooped up at home, but you can still enjoy the outdoors and experience wildlife. We'll share some ways to help you and your family connect with the outside world. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Morning show, get reactions to the latest on what was scheduled to be Election Day in Wisconsin, whatever ends up happening. It's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, the weather has been getting more and more spring-like lately. Maybe you've noticed the grass getting greener, tulips coming up from the ground, more robins at the feeder. After months of snow and cold, it's a great time to celebrate National Wildlife Week. The National Wildlife Federation is encouraging kids and adults to connect with wildlife and the outdoors. Besides, there's only so much you can do inside the house, right? The Federation has a lot of suggestions on how to do that, including planting trees, gardening, and more. David Mizajewski is a naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation and the author of the book Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife, 17 Projects and Step-by-Step Instructions to Give Back to Nature. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's a unique time, obviously, to talk about wildlife and getting out into the great outdoors. Do you have specific recommendations for this kind of unique situation we're in right now, David?
Yeah, we do. You know, at National Wildlife Federation, we've been hosting National Wildlife Week for decades. And, you know, normally we're really trying to get people to head out into nature, into the wilderness, and go to those campsites and national parks and all of those kinds of places to enjoy the great outdoors and hopefully observe wildlife. And obviously this year with the COVID-19 pandemic, we have kind of shifted our messaging a little bit and focused it a little bit more towards home. And, you know, the reality is that nature really is all around us. You don't necessarily have to go far away on a trip in order to experience it. Nature is literally right outside our door, even if you live in the middle of a city. And so for National Wildlife Week, we're doing something that we're calling the My Wildlife Challenge. And what we're hoping folks will do is just share pictures of themselves out in nature or their favorite spot in nature. You know, these could be the pictures from your last trip out into the wilderness, or they could be pictures that you take right now in your own little piece of the earth, your yard or your garden space, or, you know, on your evening walk with your kids or your dog. Obviously, we want to make sure everyone is practicing the appropriate social and physical distancing, staying at least 6 feet away from anybody if you are outside, and washing your hands and following all those best practices. But if you do that, it's still okay to get outside. And in fact, it can really be helpful to de-stress in these really stressful times.
Well, I don't like the reason that we have to do this, but I kind of love the idea that, okay, to enjoy nature and wildlife, we don't have to drive across the country to a national park. We can take that stuff that's kind of background noise for us and focus in on some of what makes it special and unique. Can you get us started on some ideas on how to do that? Maybe the little brown birds we see every day, how can we recognize them again and start to have fun, you know, just seeing them around us?
Yeah, you know, backyard birding is the perfect way to connect with nature during the pandemic. You don't have to travel. Again, you literally just have to step outside your door into your yard, and there are birds all around us. We're in the beginning of spring migration. And there's, you know, a lot of species that are going to be showing up this week in the Wisconsin, you know, across Wisconsin, everything from, you know, songbirds, you know, orioles, flycatchers, vireos, lots of different warblers, but also things like sandhill cranes and pelicans and terns. There's all sorts of bird activity going on depending on where you live. And so one of the fun things to do is just go outside and start listening. You know, bird calls to me are, it's kind of like learning a new language. You know, if you were to travel to a different part of the world and to where people speak a language that you don't speak, it's just a lot of, you know, background noise. But once you start learning a word here and a phrase there, suddenly you get kind of clued in. To me, learning birdsong is the same thing. You know, most of us take for granted and you just hear all these, you know, birds chirping, and it's, again, background noise. But once you begin to identify one species and then a second species, suddenly experiencing the outdoors has whole new dimensions. And in fact, we've actually got a whole we've got an app, a new series of nature guide apps from the National Wildlife Federation that have all of the songs of all of the birds across North America. So you could download that app and actually listen and try to identify some of the different birds that are found right outside your door. Great thing to do with kids as well.
David, I'm a fantastic student for this because I can identify two or three birds by their sounds, and that's about it. What's a good place for me to start? Maybe using that app, or I know a lot of, you know, ornithology labs have them. How do I listen to what's out there and then match up with something like that in an app to where I can start to learn that that foreign language that the birds are speaking?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think apps are the way to go. And as I was mentioning, the National Wildlife Federation has a whole new series of nature guides. And it's not just birds. We've got them on mammals, which also make certain calls. Amphibians, frogs are also calling right now. And our nature guide apps have a whole bunch of amphibian sounds, too. So a lot of times, frogs can actually sound like birds and vice versa. So, you know, the apps are a really great way to do this because you can download them onto your mobile device and, again, walk out the door with them. We're kind of talking about them as 21st century field guides, because in the old days you had to lug a giant book with you when you went out into nature to, you know, help identify. And these nature guide apps that we have now allow you to take literally 50,000 pages of content and thousands of audio files with you right in your pocket.
Wow.
So again, you can do this in your yard, on your evening walk, you know, that kind of thing. And it's a fun way to, you know, kind of experiment. You know, you're going to hear something and you're going to have to take some educated guesses on what it might be. But the apps actually let you hone in on your location. You know, you might have seen the bird and you don't know what it's called, but you can kind of filter the search results by things like the size and the shape and the color of the bird to help you kind of figure out, you know, what the potential options are. And then once you narrow it down, you can listen to a few of the different calls and hopefully you'll find the bird that you're hearing. And in doing so, you might even pick up, you know, the call of a different bird species too. So that's a really fun and easy way to, you know, to kind of, again, experience nature. You can put out a bird feeder right now too. That's something very simple. So many Americans have bird feeders already. And, you know, it's a great way to attract, you know, your backyard birds to one spot every single day so that you can see and enjoy them. And I was talking about the My Wildlife Challenge. that's another great opportunity to snap some pictures of the nature visiting your yard right there at a bird feeder. And what we are hoping folks will do is upload those pictures to the National Wildlife Week website. And in doing so, give us all something fun to look at, something to lift our spirits while we're all, you know, practicing self-quarantine during the pandemic. And every time somebody uploads photos to the My Wildlife Challenge, you get entered to win a cool outdoor prize packet with just some gear and things that will help you actually experience nature once the pandemic is lifted and you can go out camping and hiking and things like that.
Talking to David Mizajewski, naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation, talking about appreciating nature, maybe just in our own backyard, out our own window when travel is off the table. You can join in. A new number today at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Are you doing some backyard birding right now or appreciating nature in your own backyard, your own community? 800-228-5615. Well, David, I wonder, you know, we've got squirrels and rabbits all around. You can see those cities, country, just about anywhere. Are there ways that we can, again, these are background noise animals for me. Are there ways we can look at them with a fresh eye and become animal behaviorists and figure out what they're doing this time of year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what it's all about. It's about while we can't go out on our normal day-to-day routines because of the pandemic, and many of us are working from home and the kids are home, you know, it's as simple as just going outside and making it a point to look at things that you might have otherwise ignored, right? And so, or listen for that matter, or smell, you know, all of our senses can be used to really experience the nature around us, even taste. You know, one of the things that we're also trying to encourage folks to do is plant a vegetable garden right now, or an herb garden. You know, if anybody is a gardener, you probably have seed packets lying around from last year. I know I do. So this is a perfect time to sow some seeds. You can plant them indoors, even if it's just in like little paper Dixie cups or something, a little bit of potting soil, and get them going. Great thing to do with the kids. And then once the weather is warm enough where you're going to be past frost, you can plant them in the ground or in pots and then nurture them and watch them grow. This whole idea of doing a pandemic victory garden is something that is a lot of people are doing, you know, growing our own food so that we don't necessarily have to rely on going out to the grocery stores. So this is a fun way to, again, get a little bit more connected to nature, get yourself and your family outside, do something that can actually be part of if you have kids, it can be part of the learning that kids are doing as they're being homeschooled, you know, the life cycle of plants and the relationship between plants and animals. If, you know, if you're trying to attract birds, you know, what do birds eat? They eat seeds, they eat berries, they eat insects, and our plants in our garden provide those. So lots of great opportunities there to just kind of connect the dots. And really, it's as simple as just making that a goal, making it a priority, and going outside and just observing. And I guarantee you will be shocked and surprised if you actually do that, all the different cool things that you're going to observe right outside your door.
It's National Wildlife Week. In a time of pandemic, we're talking about how we can experience the outdoors and nature during this outbreak with David Mizajewski, naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation. If you go to their website, you can find info about some of the apps that he's been talking about. And you can join our conversation right now. Different number than usual. Regular callers, the number today is 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Have you been able to get outside and experience some wildlife? What kind of interesting birds, animals, and insects have you seen maybe in your own backyard? Are you looking forward to visits over the next few months from maybe butterflies? 800-228-5615 is the number to call or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about National Wildlife Week. That's the National Wildlife Federation's initiative to get people outside to the extent that they can during this COVID-19 outbreak. They've got lots of advice at their website, including some apps on how you can appreciate nature, maybe just by looking out your own window. David Mizajewski is with us, a naturalist at the National Wildlife Federation and the author of Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife, 17 Projects and Step-by-Step Instructions to Give Back to Nature. You can join in at 800-228-5615. We want to know how you're celebrating nature, maybe closer to home than usual. Are you and the family making it a point to get outside when you can? What kind of stuff are you seeing outside? Birders, what are you seeing? Getting any exciting visitors lately? 800-228-5615 is the number to call. That's 800-228-5615. Let's go to your calls now. We have Dan with us in Brule. Dan, hello.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. What have you been seeing, Dan?
I've been very fortunate with some of this weather coming through that it's the season that the trumpeter swans have been returning. Ooh. And fortunate enough to have them coming in and making a visit on an old abandoned beaver pond right by the backyard. And it's been beautiful. They sound like a old junior high band trumpeter, say, you know, like the trombone section trying to warm up every time they come in and out.
That's
fantastic,
amazing.
Dan. Yeah, David, that's a great one to hear.
Yeah,
you go ahead, David.
A great example of the fact, again, that nature is all around us. And, you know, it sounds like you might be in a more rural area, Dan, but, you know, even if folks are living in cities, these birds are flying by. You know, most of our cities, major cities, are in some kind of migratory flyway. So it's literally just about getting out there and opening up your ears and opening up your eyes, and you're going to see some amazing stuff.
Dan, thanks so much for that call. Now, David, I know in your book you wrote about attracting birds. You also wrote about attracting butterflies, and I'm looking forward to monarchs. Some milkweed adopted some of my garden spaces a couple years ago, and I let it go, and it's spreading, and I threw in some feed plants, and now, you know, monarchs are showing up in pretty good numbers each year. Can you talk about how we can make sure we're on their flight path?
Absolutely, yeah, and I'm glad you brought up monarchs, because the world of local wildlife is broader than just birds. There's tons of insects, and butterflies, of course, are insects. And, you know, people don't tend to think of insects as wildlife, but they are. They're animals, just like mammals and birds and reptiles and things like that. And so these are a group of wildlife that can really be benefit from what we call a wildlife habitat garden. They're the kinds of wildlife that could coexist with us, you know, in our cities and towns and neighborhoods. And unfortunately, in the case of the monarch, it's kind of become the poster animal for what happens when we human beings get rid of natural habitats, specifically when we get rid of the native plants that wildlife has co-evolved with and that actually rely on each other to complete their life cycle. So, of course, monarch butterflies, well, like all butterflies, they start out as caterpillars. And every butterfly and moth species, their caterpillars can only feed on the leaves of certain plants. We call them that species host plant. Without those host plants, the caterpillars die and the populations of these insects go down. Now, for monarchs, they can only feed on milkweed. There's a bunch of different species of milkweed, but it's only milkweed that they can use as a host plant. And again, milkweed has a PR problem because it's got weed in the name. And so we have gotten really good at just wanting to get rid of it, whether it's in our yards and gardens or in agricultural areas. And as a result, the monarch population has plummeted. It's one of the main reasons. And so what you just described, Rob, is exactly what we're hoping folks will do. Plant some native milkweeds in your garden, plant some native wildflowers that are going to provide nectar to the adult butterflies. Milkweed actually does both. It gets beautiful blooms on it that the adult butterflies will nectar at. And that's what we can do. Plus, don't spray pesticides in your yard. And if everybody does that, and now's a perfect time to be getting out there and planting those milkweed seeds and those native wildflowers, we're going to support the monarch butterfly population. Now, in Wisconsin, you guys are kind of towards the northern end of the monarch butterflies, the eastern monarch, their migratory route. These are one of the few migratory insects, and they – think about this. A butterfly flies from as far north as like southern Canada all the way down to the mountains outside of Mexico City. And there they overwinter for about 8 months. And just a few weeks ago, that entire population of butterflies is now migrating north. And it's going to take them 3, 4, maybe even 5 generations of laying their eggs on the milkweed plants, of their caterpillars going through metamorphosis and then emerging as the adults before they make it up to Wisconsin. And what they are going to need at that point in time are lots of those milkweed plants and other native wildflowers. So if everybody does that now, you'll know that you're helping give that population a boost, because it's actually really declined precipitously in the last few decades, and they need all the help we can get. That's the kind of stuff that the National Wildlife Federation has been promoting through our Garden for Wildlife program, and it's the exact kind of thing that folks can be doing this week during National Wildlife Week.
We're talking to David Mizajewski, naturalist at the National Wildlife Federation, talking about National Wildlife Week and ways to appreciate nature and wildlife, even when we can't travel so much to do it. Our executive producer, Judith Sears-Poisson, mentioned that, working mostly from home now, she's become more aware of the rhythm of birds in her backyard, what time different species might come to the feeders, how they act when they're there. That makes me think, David, a great project for kids would be to just have them be naturalists and keep a little field guide. What birds, how many, when are they there, when do they leave, what are they doing? That could be a lot of fun for them.
Exactly. It does not have to be complicated. One of the other amazing resources that we have up on the National Wildlife Week website, which, by the way, is nationalwildlifeweek.nwf, as in National Wildlife Federation, .org. So nationalwildlifeweek.nwf.org. We have made all of our Ranger Rick magazines available for free on our website. And so that means that all of our Ranger Rick and Ranger Rick Jr. and Ranger Rick Cub magazines have online versions with all the fun stories and comics and content photos that are in those magazines, plus educators' guides, plus parent guides, plus a whole host of other stuff like videos and games and projects and crafts. So if you have kids at home and you're starting to go stir crazy and the homeschooling is becoming a challenge, please tap into all this free Ranger Rick content. The magazine wins awards every year. My colleagues produce, these magazines that I'm personally incredibly proud of. I read the magazines as a kid. And so the idea that you just said about getting your kids tapped into being, sort of budding naturalists just by encouraging them to go out and observe and record what they see. That's where it starts with becoming a naturalist. That's how I got my start when I was a kid. That's the exact kind of content that you're going to get from the free Ranger Rick resources. And again, folks can go to nationalwildlifeweek.nwf.org to access that, to get more information on the My Wildlife Challenge and how you can enter that by uploading your photos or videos of nature. And it's just an incredible resource that I hope everybody checks out.
David, one more activity we haven't spent much time on. For people with the room, with the yard to do it, you're encouraging people to plant a tree to celebrate the week.
Absolutely. I mean, it's always a good thing to plant a tree. Trees are wildlife habitat. They provide us with shade. They can help us keep our houses cool and reduce energy costs. They, of course, produce oxygen and take in carbon dioxide. So, trees are just a good thing to do, anytime. So if you happen to be able to, maybe you have some acorns in your yard that you could now plant into a pot and make a little, sort of home nursery. That's a great thing that you can do now. You can also call your local nursery or garden center and see if they are operating. Some of them still are, and they're doing things like sort of roadside pickup, where you don't have to, violate any kind of social distancing rules, but you still might be able to get some plant material and actually plant a tree.
David, just briefly, where you are, what is the next wildlife migratory visitor or hibernating visitor that you're looking forward to seeing?
Well, I am currently in the New York City area, and so we're definitely practicing lots of social distancing here. I am on my evening walks with my dog hearing the spring peepers. Mm. And these are tiny little tree frogs. They make a big old noise. And to me, it is just the sign that spring is really here. And it's kind of like magic. It only happens for, a couple of weeks at this time of year. So pretty amazing.
That's a great sound. David, thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you, and happy National Wildlife Week.
David Mizajewski is a naturalist for the National Wildlife Federation and the author of Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife, 17 Projects and Step-by-Step Instructions to Give Back to Nature. We talked to him today about National Wildlife Week and the importance of connecting with the outdoors. If you search online for National Wildlife Week, you'll find their website with the resources he was talking about, the field guides, the bird sounds, and the free, apparently, Ranger Rick magazines. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, political divisions emerged right away as the novel coronavirus started to show up in the United States, and they may have hurt our response to the outbreak. We'll talk about disease in a divided country. A guest tells us why regular rituals are more important than ever when our daily lives see a lot of uncertainty. And we'll get the latest on Wisconsin's scheduled election day, whether or not it ends up happening tomorrow. And we'll take your calls with what you think about how the state handled it. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.